What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back. This is the Deep Corner, episode 24. We're back. Hopefully everyone enjoyed Memorial Day weekend. I'm Rob St. Clair, and a very special guest joining me today, outside hitter from Team Pineapple, Mr. Tomas Goldsmith. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I've been watching the show and been a fan, so excited to get a chance to get on it.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for calling in. Excited to introduce you more so to the people watching at home. Before we get into talking a bunch of volleyball, how's your lockdown treating you? Been able to play very much or staying busy?
No, I haven't played that much. I just started playing a little bit last week. On Wednesday, I did like a little test double session. Played a little bit of grass triples on Saturday. Here in Milwaukee County, we're still on lockdown, you know, no non-essential activities. So we got to travel, you know, 45 minutes out of the city to find some ball. We're trying to keep it small groups, but before that, I was just peppering with my wife, just getting in a couple touches here and there, setting to myself on the floor.
Yep, whatever it takes. Where volleyball players are pretty famous for driving pretty substantial distances. Yeah. just to get out and play.
Definitely nothing new for me.
Yeah, seriously.
Probably the only driving I really do is to go play. You know, but I had a real fear of, I guess, missing out or getting rusty or whatever, but I keep telling myself I've played thousands of hours of volleyball. I've done thousands of reps. It's going to take quite a while for it to disappear.
Good point.
I'm not too stressed about it right now.
Good point. Well, whenever we can get back into the gym, we know the rust for you and the rest of the guys is going to fall off pretty quick. Yeah. So let's kind of start at the beginning of your volleyball journey. You were born in Tucson, Arizona, right? Before moving to Milwaukee. What was
Tucson and then Kenosha.
Oh, gotcha. So when did volleyball first enter the picture?
Both my parents played. I remember peppering when I was 4 years old with my parents, with going down to the park. They'd be playing grass doubles tournaments, and I'd pepper with anybody who would pepper with me. So I've been playing basically my whole life. I've been around it for a long time. I didn't start playing very organized ball until I moved out to Wisconsin. I started playing club volleyball when I was 13. I did that through all my junior years and played in high school on the high school team.
Were you an outside always, or did you flip around with some
positions? Yeah, I've played a lot of different positions. I played setter for a while. When I was a younger kid, that was like one of my main roles was setter. Played opposite for a while. Played outside, played libero. Anything but middle.
Must be nice.
I was not a very tall kid. And I guess I went comparatively to the people I play with now, I'm not tall either. But I was never the tall kid around, you know, growing up.
Yeah. So entering college, I know you from playing against each other in college club. You played at UW-Milwaukee on the club team and had an exceptionally good college team. You guys were really, really good. I've had a handful of college club players on the show, and we've talked a lot about kind of how the level has increased and how people are kind of starting to get it, how people are, from the outside, are starting to look at club as like a real option for going to play some semi-serious ball after college if you want, like, to pick the school for the school or whatever it may be. What are some of the highlights from your time playing college club?
Yeah, well, actually out of high school, I went to Rutgers University, which was, back then it was the D1 program.
That's, I thought that was true.
I chose that route. I had always wanted to go play in California, actually, but I didn't really have any offers out there except from UC Santa Cruz, and I didn't have the funds to do out-of-state tuition at UC Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah.
And so I chose Rutgers because I wanted to walk in and not be the best player in the gym. I wanted to have lots of people around me who had the work ethic that I had to push me to get better, right? So at Rutgers, I ended up playing libero. When I transferred to Milwaukee, my sophomore year of college, it was a very different situation. I had gone from being a hardworking player amongst many very dedicated hardworking players to, you know, a very hardworking player amongst a lot of hardworking people who wanted to have fun. Mm-hmm. And it was a very different atmosphere, right?
That was very delicately put. Well done.
Yeah. So the thing, like the real highlight for me was really learning how to be a leader and getting those people who wanted to, I guess maybe have fun more than to win, and get them to value the time that we'd spent at practices, get them to value the time we spent at tournaments, to the point where winning and playing our best volleyball was the goal. And that really became the motivation for everybody on the team. And so the highlight for me was being able to mold the program as a player coach and as a team captain to follow in, I guess, this vision of success and have great results from it. That was really the highlight for me.
Yeah, that's what I've always found cool about club, is that you can kind of make it, you as your team and your group can kind of make it whatever you want to make it. And you guys mm-hmm. didn't have a formal coach, neither did I when I was playing. And I kind of love that about it, is that the players can take full leadership and ownership, and you can create whatever kind of culture you want to create. So that's that speaks to your leadership ability to take a team and kind of transform the culture from when you started to when you finished there.
Yeah, it was also a great opportunity for me as a player, because at Rutgers, being a libero, I felt a little bit pigeonholed, and my growth trajectory maybe was significantly different than what it became. By going to club, I was able to say, no, I'm going to be the outside hitter on the team, and I'm going to build my game as much as possible. And having the opportunity to kind of explore who I wanted to be as a player without having a coach necessarily telling me what it should be was freeing, you know, very, I think in retrospect, it's really good opportunity for me to develop the game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Again, you can kind of make it whatever you want it to be. So we've seen, especially lately since you and I have left college, that a lot of guys from college club are somehow able to get overseas and pursue like real mm-hmm. like bona fide professional volleyball. A lot of college club guys are doing it in the UK, like doing the whole grad school like UK semi-pro thing. A couple have made the jump to do it for real, which is really impressive. So like when in the era when you and I were playing, what do you think between when you started and when you finished, do you think there was an increase in the level of NCVF, or do you think that players started to kind of take it a little bit more seriously? Or what do you, I don't know how much you've watched it recently since you graduated, but how much do you think the college club level has changed in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years?
Well, it is a little bit hard to answer that because I haven't been too involved with it recently. Mm-hmm. At least while I was there, you would see different teams become better or worse depending on who happened to walk through the doors and who graduated.
Yep, that's the thing.
But I didn't necessarily see an overall increase in level. I thought it was pretty consistent. The best teams, I felt like we're always competing at like probably, I mean, I felt that especially in my senior, the team I played on was a very solid team that would easily compete with some D2 schools, and for sure in the NAIA and D3, you know, and so I felt like that higher tier club was always populated with players who had the caliber to play at the, you know, high level NCAA, but for whatever reason had chosen not to, or maybe they were overlooked because of their height, or you know, Marquette University, for example, became a very good program after I graduated. Mm-hmm. I trained a lot with them and helped mentor some of them in their quest to win a national title. And, you know, so for them, they wanted to go to Marquette. Marquette had the program, but Marquette doesn't have a varsity program. So really, I think the level of club, I don't know if it's necessarily been increasing, but I think it's progressed along with all the other programs, you know, varsity or not, in terms of the size of the athletes, the speed at which the game's played, the control and the power. I think it's all, you know, every level of the game is increasing, I think, kind of at a similar rate, not just club is getting more players or something.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point, and that speaks to the growth of the men's game nationwide at a lot of different levels, which is obviously good news for all of us that care about it. You made a good point about the upper echelon of college club teams that could have easily been competitive with the NAIAs, the D3s, maybe the D2s. Did you ever get a chance to play against any of those teams? I did a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, how did that go? What was your assessment of the relative levels having actually played against some of those teams, even if they weren't necessarily in season?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we beat most of those teams that we played. We played Cardinal Stritch when they were, I mean, they still are a very top-level contender in AIA, and they were when we played them. We would host a tournament. My last 2 years, we hosted an event and would draw like Carthage, some of the other NAIA teams. The Marquette Classic Throwdown is a tournament that's been running for a long time.
That's a good one.
They draw in some varsity programs. I don't know that I ever played any D1 schools while I was at UW Milwaukee. But definitely we did do like some D2 and D3 and NAIA. And for the most part, I mean, I remember winning most of the matches. Yeah. Maybe I'm a little biased, but I think, you know, I've been around good volleyball a lot in my life, and so I feel confident in saying that we definitely had a very good team.
Oh, yeah.
And the other teams were very good as well.
Yeah, and I was around at about the same time, and I'll be the first one to confirm how much winning your teams did on average.
Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is that we're looking back at this period from 4 to 8 years ago, and a lot of us have continued to go find places to play and higher levels and continue to be successful. You mentioned the players that go overseas and play professionally. And those players wouldn't be able to do that if they didn't have this experience of playing in a quality league.
That's right. And that's a great kind of transition to exactly what I wanted to ask about next, is that, like you said, a lot of guys, after they're done in college, whether it's club or whatever college level, will continue to seek out ways to play the game and continue mm-hmm. to try to improve themselves, whether they're pursuing volleyball as a career or not. And I think you are a very, very good example of that, because even as pretty good of a player as you were in college, I think you've continued to level up your game even more so since then, more so than maybe anyone else I know that didn't go play overseas. And I've always been impressed by that. So what that has to be that has to take a certain mindset approach, right? Because you're not in formal practice anymore, at least not as mm-hmm. much as you were in college. There, you know, you have to drive distances to find tournaments or, you know, pick up games or whatever it is. But it seems pretty clear from watching you the past several years that you've had a focused approach to continuing to improve your game. Can you describe how you've done that?
Yeah, I think the underlying factor is that I love winning, and that's been my main driving thing for a long time. Coupled with, I like how far can I go?
Yeah.
What level am I going to peak out at? And so I continue to seek bigger opportunities, bigger stages to compete on, and I want to have the tools to compete effectively at that level. So those two driving forces are what kind of lead me to make decisions. So, you know, winning is an attitude that really encompasses your entire life. It's not just the day of a match, I'm ready to step on the court and win. It's the entire week before, you're getting a good night's sleep every night. You're eating right. You're not drinking. You're, you know, you take care of your body. You're working out, you're getting appropriate touches, and when you are training, it's with the mindset of like, I need to do this right every time. So I've just continued to try to embrace that, and some days are maybe not as consistent as others. I mean, everybody has cheat days here and there.
Of course.
But I think it's really a consistent approach to like, what am I doing right now that's going to help me reach my goal of making to the next level? Whether that's lifting, training, finding a new training partner, or even just going to bed on time.
Yeah, that's a very mature, professional approach to game improvement and just life improvement. That's really good stuff. So let's break down your indoor game a little bit more before we talk
Sure.
about how you've also expanded to the sand and the grass, because those are interesting facets of volleyball too. So first of all, I want to talk. Let's talk serving a little bit, because anyone that's watched you play like in the Midwest or whatever tournaments the past several years knows that you have a jump serve that is worthy of being afraid of, and that is capable of taking over a match when you're hitting it hard and hitting the right spots. So, I guess first, give a, I don't know, a 16-year-old outside hitter one key jump serve tip.
Toss it high and go get it. I think it's the best one I ever
Well
got it
said.
from my dad. Yeah,
Toss it high and go get it. So is your mindset in matches, is it that simple, or is it dependent on game situation, or are you targeting people, or are you just trying to hit your best serve?
I mean, so that's yes for one thing, right? But yeah, it is a little more complicated than that. I've been working on the jump serve since I was probably like 13 or 14 years old. I would go in the gym and with my dad, and we would set up a net and just rep it out for, and we did that a lot when I was a kid and in high school. And the couple of goals that we would have were high consistency, clearing the net by 3, 4 feet so that we weren't flirting with hitting the tape, and deep in the court. As we got better at that, or I got better at that, we added different aspects to it, speed, mixing in like the off speed, different shots like that. And so really, I want to have every option available. If I usually serve out of the middle and indoor, because then the other players on the court kind of screen, makes it a little easier to get an ace. But if there are lights over the middle court, I want to be able to serve from the left or from the right and hit different spots. So when I'm in a match, I want to, I always have the mentality like, okay, it's the end of the match, 23 all in game four, somebody's going home, and I need to put in my best serve right now, not just the serve that's in, but like if I can win the match, then this is an opportunity for me to do that. So depending on what the other team looks like and their serve receive, I generally just pick where's the biggest empty space, and I'm going to hit it as hard as I can in that spot.
So how about the mix up, the cut short, like you talked about? How many where's the general spot for that in the pattern? Or you don't have to give away your secrets if you don't want to.
No, that's fine. It's good after a timeout because it's a slightly less risky serve. The other teams maybe dug in a little bit preparing for, hey, we just got to get our platform out early, pass it off the net kind of thing, and they're not looking for it maybe. It's also good when you see just somebody's hanging way deep or the seam is uneven, like two players line up, one person's in front of the other. That creates kind of a difficult seam to navigate. And so if you can find that spot, you can be successful.
Yeah. So serving is really the only thing in volleyball that I would describe as closed-chained, where you have complete control of it from the start to the finish. There's nothing else in volleyball like that. It all depends on, the contact before you from another person. But you can do whatever you want from the toss to the approach to going up and getting it. And I've noticed that a lot of players, especially jump servers, are able to create or manufacture their own like momentum or intensity from the service line. From like Matt Anderson of the men's national team is a very good example of that. I've always found that like when his serve is on, the rest of the areas of his game get a lot better. Do you agree with that for yourself?
Somewhat, yeah. Like if you're in flow in one area, it's probably going to bleed over and help your other areas of the game. But I try not to necessarily allow myself to ride one skill. As an outside, you're responsible for a lot. I mean, even any position, you're on the court. Like you need to make the play and the right decision when it's every time it comes to you to do it. So when I was in college, actually one of my very first college club nationals, we lost the match, our gold match to Illinois, And I knew that going into that match, because they were a very good team, like if we were going to have a chance at winning, I had to play really well. And I played kind of okay, and my passing kind of was not that good. And I felt like that torpedoed my hitting. I
Got
mean,
it.
my hitting wasn't bad, but wasn't good. And so since that time, I really tried to separate the different areas of the game. Like if I'm struggling with passing, like I still need to be a good blocker and be a good hitter. And so I try not to ride any one high or low too much. I just try to do the right decisions and, physical actions over and over again.
Yeah, so let's talk about hitting. You've developed into a really, really good BIC hitter. That's something that Loy likes to get you involved on for Team Pineapple, which is just electrifying to watch. But I'm a little more interested in hitting in left front because, like you said a little bit earlier, against the guys like the VLA guys you're going to be playing against now, you're a little undersized. You're hitting against these 6'9" dudes, and you're maybe what 6'3", 6'3", 6'4". So,
6'5" with my shoes on.
oh.
No, probably, yeah, 6'3".
So, what's the mindset of being a little bit undersized going up against big blockers, whether you're in or out of system, trying to score points and do the right things on the left side? That's some high level stuff.
Yeah. Well, I've been able to jump pretty high for most of my
Yeah,
playing
that
years.
obviously helps.
And I've continue to work on that and been able to jump higher and higher, so that helps. But I've also never really like been intimidated by another blocker, or how big they are. I've never felt when I've been approaching that like, oh, there's nothing I can do here. So I've always, just tried to keep the ball in front of me, reaching as high as I can and hitting, hard through the ball deep in the court. I think when I was younger, I would try to bounce the ball a little bit more, and now I don't worry about that and just, high and hard, either through the hands or around them. So I don't know that there's anything particular. Like, I guess, yeah, I think a little bit though. There's definitely a difference when you play against smaller players to the taller players, but it's just remembering, okay, I need to really focus on a high contact, and then after that, it kind of takes care of itself, I think.
Definitely helps when Loy Ball is the one setting you the ball.
Yeah, when you can expect a pretty consistent location and a good tempo where it puts pressure on the blockers to line up solid, that helps a lot.
Yeah, he probably makes the rest of you and your hitters' jobs pretty easy. We'll talk
Yeah.
about what playing with Loy is like in a little bit, but like I mentioned a little bit earlier, you've expanded your game to the sand and to the grass. And a lot of people that aren't from the Midwest don't really know that much about grass volleyball as a format. But I wanted to get into that a little bit because I think it's really cool. I think it's really dynamic. And you've reached about the highest levels of that exist in the US right now. You made it to the finals at Waupaca last year, which is a huge achievement for those who don't know what's going on there. So grass 3-on-3. What do you think is like, what skills do you transfer between all different surfaces of the volleyball game, and what do you think is unique to grass?
Being on a fairly hard surface, the indoor skills translate fairly well to the grass game. But there is, I think the major difference is actually a mental difference, not a physical or technique difference. And the reason I say that is when you minimize the amount of people on the court, you shrink the team from six down to three, but you're keeping the court the same size. You have to bring a lot more mental focus to stay consistent. When I first started playing open level grass when I was about maybe 19, I was losing to teams by just a little bit. Teams like Nils Dobbers in his prime with Chris Kozlarik and Herschel Thacker, and seeing these teams out there, or a couple other club guys, Matt Martin
Oh, yeah.
and Joe Joukowsky, for example. And when we would lose those games, I'd look back and say, well, what happened? What was the difference? And it wasn't that they were like more skilled than I was or more athletic, you know, or except for Nils, like they didn't hit the ball harder than I did. But they were tougher mentally. They were more consistent. They could pass the balls that they needed to pass and serve in and get the points serving when they needed to. And as I've played more and more grass and, you know, realizing that the ultimate goal was to be more consistent and kind of grind down the competition, not to, I don't know, outflash them with better technique, et cetera.
Okay.
Then I started to make better and better strides in grass, you know. So those tight game threes, generally, I feel like I win those games now, later in my career, than I did when I was younger. And the difference, I mean, my technique has improved, you know, everything has improved, but really it's my mental focus, I think, is the biggest difference from indoor to grass.
Okay.
That being said, a lot of indoor players, I think, can successfully make that transition if they're able to learn that and get out there and get a lot of experience playing.
I agree. Yeah, it's very different from the sand learning curve because you have to just totally relearn how to move. On the grass, you don't have to mm-hmm. relearn how to move. The you know, the movement and the speed is pretty transferable. You just got to figure out how to cover a lot mm-hmm. more court than you're used to.
Yeah, I mean, some of the strategy stuff takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
And passing on a big court, you know, with two people sometimes. There are some changes, but those come through playing experience. You know, and you will see like a lot of, in Wisconsin, since there isn't like a D1 school for men's volleyball, you'll see a lot of guys from Oshkosh or whatever and come out and be very successful playing grass. And that's because they're good players and grass is what people do around here.
Yep.
And then you get guys come up from Chicago and, you know, maybe they have a big name and they played at Loyola or wherever, and they will struggle against these, you know, average Joes from Wisconsin in their eyes. And the reason is because these people have learned the game of grass volleyball and they know what it takes to play consistently at that level, where these other guys are still figuring it out.
Yeah, I think that's well said. All right, I want to talk about Team Pineapple, but before that, I want to subject you to this little set of quick, like rapid fire interview questions that I've been hitting the last sure. several guests with. So just, I'll give you the question, give me the first thing that comes to your head, nice and quick. Ready?
Sure.
All right, early mornings or late nights?
Early morning.
Ooh, best pregame warm-up song or artist?
I actually don't like listening to music before a game.
Interesting. What's the best day of the week?
Saturday.
Stuff block or
day.
Yeah, stuff block or service ace?
Service ace.
Best post-game meal?
Burger.
What's the hardest position in volleyball, indoor?
Serving specialist.
Ooh, that's a really good answer. What's your favorite jersey number?
47.
It's a very unique one. I remember you wearing that in college.
Cosmic number of the universe.
Oh, cool. Cats or dogs? You got the
both.
Both? That's a good answer.
I have both.
The poster behind you is, or the picture behind you is just the best.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sports team in any sport?
The Wildcats, my hometown university.
Nice. Who's your favorite athlete in any sport ever?
I guess Roger Federer comes to mind.
Good one. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Somebody on the show said teleportation. I think that would make my life much easier. I wouldn't have to travel so much for these competitions.
I agree with that.
Just be there.
Very hard to disagree with that one. What sport are you the best at besides volleyball?
Ultimate frisbee, maybe.
Nice one. Beach or mountains?
Prefer in a place where they're both nearby. I guess I'd have to say beach, but they're both pretty nice.
Good answer. What's your favorite color?
Green.
And what's stronger for you, loving winning or hating losing?
You know, this one, I started to make it a little bit longer. I love winning. You know, I said earlier, but my wife pointed out something interesting to me. She said, well, you've been playing on these AVC qualifiers and you haven't won yet. So really, what's driving you is that you hate losing and you want to keep trying and win. So I still think I want to go with the more positive. I love winning, but you know, hate, losing is a consistent driver to keep playing and to get better.
Yeah, the line between those is definitely a little bit blurred, and I have a hard time answering that question for myself, so I find it interesting to see what people come up with quickly. So before we talk about Team Pineapple, actually, I wanted to get your, or expose the people to what you're, what you actually went to school for, and that's that you were a music major. You got your master's in something music related, right?
I don't have a master's yet, no.
Oh, you don't? Gotcha.
But my, I have two bachelor's.
That's what it is.
Fine arts degree, one in jazz studies and another in multiple woodwind performance.
So, yeah, you and I have talked a little music before, but I want to just expose that for the people a little bit more. So jazz studies, a little more theoretical of a degree. Were you playing in ensembles, playing saxophone?
Oh, no, it was very performance driven. I mean, there was a lot of theory. There were two majors. They overlapped really well. So on the one hand, the multiple woodwind performance was on saxophone, clarinet, and flute. And that was, you know, taking lessons, playing ensemble, learning history, learning theory. And then the jazz was, let's add another layer of history, let's add five more layers of theory, and basically improv and all this, you know, memorization and different style. So, yeah, I absolutely loved being in school, and my job was to play music all the time and play volleyball. It was great.
That's the dream.
I've tried to continue that, but it's hard to, you know, make a lot of money as a musician.
Especially when you can't play gigs because of lockdown. At that point, it's impossible. Feel bad musicians. Right,
I had two gigs canceled because of the lockdown back in March.
Yep. Do you find any similarities between the way you approach music and the way you approach volleyball? Is there at all a connection there? Because in my experience, there is.
Yeah, it's, for me, it's a huge connection. I mentioned earlier, when you're practicing, you have to practice the right way. And you have to, you know, like, from learning about how people learn, anytime you do something, reinforce it. Your brain remembers that way, whether it was right or wrong. And so practicing music, you're building this mental framework that allows you to be creative but also disciplined, and you're building this muscle memory that allows you to execute technique to express yourself. It's the same thing in volleyball. You need that mental framework to be able to understand what's happening, interpret it, and make the right choice. And then you need the muscle memory to perform the action. And so when you're practicing either one, you need to, I guess, set yourself up for those kind of, being able to do that understanding, decision making, and then execution. So they, every time I'm practicing music, it helps my brain be more prepared to play volleyball. Anytime I play volleyball, it helps my brain be more prepared to play music.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're, both of those activities engage both halves of the brain really well. I've always approached music in a very left brain sort of way. I'm less creative than the average musician, but on a volleyball court, there's so much, you know, technical ability and situational recognition that you have to rely on in kind of a left brain way. But then there's a lot of point scoring and choices and mix-ups that come from the right half of the brain. I've always thought that's interesting and has some similarities with being a musician. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and they're both a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right. So let's talk Team Pineapple finally. So you've been in Wisconsin, now in Milwaukee, for several years. Team Pineapple, based in Northeast Indiana. How the heck did you get connected with those guys?
A few seasons ago, I was playing with Lights Out, which is a team based out of Chicago, and we were playing an event and. Well, I'd actually started, I'd been asking Loy, I'd been playing against him in finals with, in PVL and all this stuff. And I kept asking him, hey, do you need an outside? Do you need a serving specialist? Do you need a libero? And trying to get on the team. And finally, I guess I must have just made a good impression at some point with my play. And I think also with my behavior off court that allowed, they called me up one day kind of over the summer a couple of years ago. Between seasons, there's like an exhibition match going to happen down in Chicago against the Icemen and LVC. And actually, another one of my teammates, Ivan Matos, called me up and said, "Hey, do you want to come play?" I told Lloyd that we should pick you up, and he said yes. So I said, "Yeah, absolutely." And at that point, you know, it doesn't really matter what else you had planned that weekend. Like, you're going to drive miles to go down there and play with Lloyd Ball on Team Pineapple. And I had a good match. I played well. I had a lot of fun. The team welcomed me right away. And so I guess I just haven't looked back since then. And I feel very grateful to continue to be a member of the team. And I look at it as a, you know, responsibility of mine to always bring my best competitive version every time I step on the court to play with them.
Well, you mentioned the impression that you made to Lloyd and some of that maybe coming off the court. I think the way that you've talked in this interview so far about how you approach the game, how you approach improvement and preparedness is something that Lloyd would strongly appreciate. I think that a guy of his professional background would think very similarly about a lot of those things. So I'm not surprised that there's a good connection and chemistry there. You mentioned that you got kind of adopted by Team Pineapple right away, and all the guys from that team that I've had on the show have talked about it being a family. I don't expect to hear any differently from you, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, whenever we're in a tight spot, we always fall back on that as a team. And it's not just, I don't think it's just words. It's a sense of trust that Loy and LJ will, some of the other veterans on the team, they've tried actively to instill that, to preach that, and they practice it in, you know, every aspect of the team building, through communication, through practices, and through matches, and, you know, pregame routines, etc. It's a very real part of the identity of Team Pineapple. And I think that's really important because when people understand that they serve the team and are a valued part of a whole, then they can contribute with confidence and with maximum effort. And instead of having like some mix of resentment or jealousy or this or that, everybody has their role and they're valued in that role, and then have the opportunity to contribute, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a really important part of Team Pineapple, and it also just makes it a lot more fun to be a part of. Some of the teams I've played in the past are a lot more fractured than that, and it's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's an impressive thing that Team Pineapple's been able to build from a culture standpoint, and the next couple years are going to be really interesting because that old veteran core that still suits up and plays a decent amount, those guys are not getting any younger.
Right.
None of us are. You and some of the other guys have at least a 10-year advantage on some of the other guys that are on your team. Lloyd, Jeff, LG, obviously, Will, you know, Jorge. You know, the list goes on. So how do you think that you being a part of kind of the Team Pineapple youth movement, is there some additional responsibility that you have trying to keep that culture carried over as the generation of the team kind of turns over, or are you confident in what's already built there?
Well, it's definitely the older generation is trusting the younger generation to continue to play the way that they laid down that framework. So it's a bit of both. The framework is there, it's strong, the older generation is still available, still contributing, especially to that camaraderie and that family unit. But there is responsibility on our shoulders as the new players to continue that. And I think that's made very clear from the start that when you come play for us, we expect heart and we expect your best effort, and we expect you to, you know, love your teammates. And I think everybody is willing to do that. They wanted to do that right away, so it's not necessarily difficult for people to contribute that. But I feel, you know, I would hate to be the person responsible for Team Pineapple not being a good team anymore. You know, or for people being angry at each other on the team. And so I think everybody wants to contribute as much as they can to building that positive and family atmosphere.
Yeah, well said.
And winning.
And yeah, that helps. And Team Pineapple is no stranger to doing a lot of that. So it seems for sure that the team is in very good hands with guys like you and some others that are even younger than you that we'll get to know a little bit better as once we get back on the floor and are able to play some matches. But Team Pineapple is definitely not going anywhere, and everyone in the volleyball community knows that very, very well. So before we get you out of here, Tomas, where is there somewhere where the people can follow along with you? And you know, once we get back on the court, whenever that is,
yeah,
people will see a lot more of you. But until then,
I'm not really the biggest Instagram person. I know you've been putting that up there for other people. You can follow me on there if you like, but you might not see much. I run a business called Volley Life, which I started to, I guess, promote and grow the beach volleyball community here in Milwaukee. And we've got a couple of Facebook pages and websites, and so I do a lot of work on there. And then I occasionally will share stuff about myself on there. But hopefully you'll be seeing me on the AVP tour and also in the VLA matches coming up.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of places to find Tomas once volleyball is safe and approved to play again. So we obviously are all very much looking forward to that day. But until then, Tomas, thanks so much for calling in and giving everyone a deeper look into who you are as a player and as a guy. I think it's going to be great. People are going to get to know you a heck of a lot better. It's just a really, really good interview. So thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. Everyone else, yeah, thanks so much for watching. I hope everyone had a good weekend. We'll be back on Friday, and we'll see you then.